Hello and welcome to Misbehave, the podcast where we explore human behavior in a business context. Season 2 of Misbehave is all about uncovering behavioral patterns which create success in life and business. We're joined by highly driven, accomplished individuals to assess their behavioral patterns and dive into how behaviors have influenced their journey.
In this episode, we sit down with Olivia Jenkins, founder of DeLouise, London-based waterproof jewelry brand, and named one of Forbes 30 Under 30. We talk about everything from startup to scale-up, managing churn in an e-commerce business, and the importance of building purpose and community with your customers. Well, welcome, Olivia. We're so pleased that you joined us. I think a great place to start would be the story of how you started DeLouise was such a beautiful one, and I think it would be something that our listeners would love to hear. So do you want to just give us a little insight into that story?
Yeah, of course. So firstly, also thank you for having me. So the DeLouise story is a very special one. So yeah, it was after lockdown, and I was one of those people that was very much didn't find their purpose earlier in life. And I was just like, lockdown, I think, was just a bit of time for everyone to reflect on where they were going and what they were doing. And especially for me. So I was thinking, I was like, oh God, like, I don't want to continue the career path I'm going down. I'm really not happy with my role. Like, I've changed teams, all that sort of thing. And I literally can remember the day. So it was just when Boris had announced that you had to go back to the office like 3 or 4 days a week. And it was uproar, by the way, because obviously working from home was such a dream. And my friend Rachel, who I worked with in my old company, texted me saying, what days of the week do you think that you're going to go back to the office? And I can't explain to you like what happened, but this spark just ignited in me. And I was like, there is no way I can go back to that office. Like, I need to do something different with my life and go down a different path. So I went to my fiance Jack and I was like, I've been feeling this kind of way. Do you have like any advice for me? Because he has been entrepreneurial from like the day he was born. Like, he was the kind of guy that was selling sweets on the playground. And he was like, well, why don't you start your own business? And at the time I was like, you are crazy. Like, I don't know anything about business. I don't know how I would do accounting. I don't know how I would sell a product. Like, I literally had zero experience in it. And he said to me, he was like, there is no difference between me and you. The only difference is that I have done this before. So, you know, when someone sort of says something to you and then it sort of like snowballs in your brain, you're like, oh, okay, maybe I could start a business. So for me, I have always loved jewelry. So I worked at Pandora when I was younger, and from like 16 to 21. And I loved that people would come in and they would open up honestly about the most wildest stories, and they would say, oh, I got this necklace when I went to Paris, or I had this when I graduated. And I felt like jewelry always had such like a sentimental feeling to it. Mm-hmm. And it had always has like stories attached to it, which was the part that I loved when I worked there, because I always felt really connected to the customers and it wasn't always so salesy. So that's when I was like, oh, I definitely think I could go into jewelry, because I had a lot of knowledge of like materials and also like marketing. I knew when it was busy and when it wasn't busy. So I started researching into different types of ways that you could do jewelry. And for me, I felt like there was nothing really in the middle. You either had like your Tiffany's at thousands of pounds, or you had Pandora, which was all silver at the time. And I was like, I just want a really good quality piece of jewelry, which is gold, that I can wear all the time and doesn't cost me like £1,000. And I couldn't find that anywhere on the market. So I was researching into different manufacturers, and I came across this one manufacturer, and I hadn't heard of stainless steel at the time. And he was like, have you ever heard of stainless steel? And I was like, this sounds way too good to be true. I feel like you're just having me on and you just want to make a sale out of me. I got the sample. So I was like, fine, I'll just order some samples and see if what he's saying is true. So I ordered the samples and they were just really living up to expectation. And I was like, oh my God, I felt like honestly, like I hit like a pot of gold or something. I literally was like, this feels like way too good to be true. And that's when I knew, I was like, I'm going to go into jewellery and that's going to be my product.
Wow. It's so interesting, isn't it? It's particularly that lovely little turning point in your thought process when Jack said, the only difference between us, for me, that actually made me go, ooh, is that he'd done it before. Yeah. And that's such a lovely message for the listeners, because often we're fearful of taking a step into the unknown just because it's something that you've never done before. Mm-hmm. So to have that encouragement, but also just the foresight to say, listen, we've often in business journeys, people haven't done something, and it's the fear of it going wrong that stops them from taking that leap of faith or taking the next baby step, as it were.
Yeah, 100%.
And you obviously named the business after your mum. What was, I know that you've talked before around that purpose and having an emotional connection to a business and how important that is. What do you think, how do you think that drives you in terms of, and the wider team from a purpose perspective?
Yes, yeah, so once I knew I had the product sorted, I was like, okay, now I need to figure out what I'm going to do for the brand side of things. And so I lost my mum in 2017, and I had always not really probably dealt with my grief, because there's no right way to deal with grief. But when I was setting up the business, I almost had like this feeling that I was like, okay, I'm ready to almost deal with it head on. And I went to Jack and I was like, I think I'm going to call the business Dee Louise and I'm going to call it after my mum. And he was like, well, yeah, you can do that. But he was like, it's going to be, he was like, it means that you have to really give it a good go and make it successful. And I was like, exactly, like that's the number one reason why I want to do it, because I wanted to have that bigger pull and that wider purpose. And I think there's a huge like buzzword around purpose and passion, and I don't think that you have to have a huge passion and purpose to have a successful business, but I do think it has a stronger pull when you do have a passion or a purpose. So like my team and the brand and our customers all come back to Dee Louise because of our purpose and because of our like tied to my mum. So they almost feel like they're dedicated to it on like a completely different personal level than if it was just a jewelry brand selling jewelry. So it's quite nice for us and the team, like it almost instills like a bit of a culture that we're on a bigger journey than just trying to sell some jewellery.
Which is, it is, and it's really important, I think, it's more important than ever, I think, even post-pandemic, around people feeling connected to something that's worthwhile, or that where there's an emotional connection. Yeah. And actually, if you think about it, even just from a marketing standpoint, connecting with someone emotionally is absolutely a way of getting them across the line to purchase. So, you know, from a practical standpoint, but also just a support in a business where they feel connected is really important and a good sort of lesson from a branding standpoint. Interested to know, Olivia, what do you feel has been sort of some of the biggest wins in your career journey so far?
Yeah, so I, on the theme of purpose, this year, it feels like last year, it's been the longest year ever, but this year, me and the team had this crazy idea that we were going to walk from Cardiff to London and raise awareness for people who have gone through grief and tough times. And I did it in March, and it was around Mother's Day. So it was all very, had such a huge meaning behind it. But the whole idea behind it wasn't that it was a crazy long walk, because I know it was a crazy long walk, but I feel like people have done way crazier things. Like I swear someone just did like 50 marathons in 50 days. So it wasn't one of those. It was still big enough. So it was 314 kilometers, which is obviously still a really long way to go. Yeah, so that was crazy. But for me, the most important part of that whole campaign was, well, A, to raise money for charity, and then B, was to help people who are grieving to get comfortable with talking about how they're grieving. So I think there's this huge narrative around grief that some people are very reluctant to talk about it. And that's obviously absolutely fine, because there's no right or wrong way to talk about grief or to grieve. But it was the whole message was, you can come on this walk and you can get comfortable with talking about the hard things that you've been through and be surrounded by people that have also gone through hard things. And it was so successful in terms of, like, we had people, customers from like all over the UK, they would come and join us on all of the days and talk about things that they've been through. And it was a really, really like safe space for people to come and open up and almost feel connected together for what they've been through. So I, like, for me, we also raised £14,000 for charity. But for me, like, that was like the biggest win I've ever had, was making these people feel a little bit better about what they've been through and just connecting to people in real life. Like, it was just, it was incredible.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great example of where, you know, you said earlier about that purpose becomes a bit of a buzzword. I think you're right that purpose and values and culture, obviously we've been in the culture game for a long time, and often it just becomes this static thing that's almost like, this is what we say in a business. But that's a great example of taking that purpose and actually making it come to life and making it impact people wider than just what you do, but actually how you then impact your customers or even the wider community from that purpose. So I think that's a great example of that. Kind of along a similar theme, obviously scaling a business comes with lots of challenges. How do you balance, because I'm sure there's been times for you where it's felt there's been pressure, there's potentially been challenges in the business, but then still maintaining those performance levels. How do you sort of balance personally that pressure, but still getting the right outcomes for the business at the same time?
Yeah, so one mantra I always say to myself, it's a bit cliche, but I always say pressure is a privilege. And it's incredible that I'm in this position that I get to work for myself every single day. And like 3 years ago, I was in a job working for a corporate that I absolutely just didn't like. So I try to remind myself of the position I'm in, because I know that I'm in a very fortunate position. But I think it's about showing up every single day, no matter the challenges, no matter the task. It's about having that persistence to show up even when you don't feel like it. And I have done a lot of work on myself and on my mindset, and I just think you get better at dealing with the rubbish the more you do it. So it's about, like, it's about being uncomfortable and facing your fears head on, and you just have to show up every single day and stack the small wins is how I think I've been able to manage it.
I think that phrase, stack the small wins, is really interesting. Talk us to us a little bit about how that works practically for you.
Yeah, so I think one of the wonders of the world is what we always say is things positively compounding, and small wins, no matter how big they are, will definitely positively compound over a long period of time. So I think in the world of social media, people want these huge successes and they want them very quickly. But it's about focusing on the things that you can control and focusing on the tiny little steps that you can take every day, because they will positively compound. And I think people sort of overlook that. But yeah, if you're constantly trying to improve the 1% in the long run, that definitely adds up.
I think it does, and it's a good reminder, isn't it, that sometimes when you're running a business, it can be the daily grind, and also you're the one that has to then come in and inspire your team to perform and continue during the tough times, and that can be difficult to maintain that level of composure at the top. Really interested to know a little bit about how you've dealt with, let's face it, some of the less sexier side of running an e-commerce business, the ops, the, you know, how have you managed to navigate your way through some of that stuff?
Yeah, definitely. So I think I totally agree with you. People don't talk about it because it's not as sexy. But at the end of the day, your customers are your biggest asset as a company. And if you aren't fulfilling your side of the agreement, then it is just going to negatively compound. So also there's the power of negatively compounding just as powerful as positively compounding. We had an incident this summer that our returns process wasn't where it needed to be. And you don't notice it in month one. You probably don't notice it in month two. But then by month three, you have all these customers who have been with you from the start and they're like dealing with this problem and they feel let down. And that can be detrimental to your business. It's all fixed now, so that's fine. But it's about realizing that your customers are your biggest asset, and anything that you can do logistically to keep them happy is such an easy win. Like, we have always had late cutoff, so you can now order on our website in the UK 8 p.m. and it will come. If you order with Express, it will come the next day. And there's very few brands, I think personally, in the UK that are still doing that. I ordered from a huge corporation, I won't name them, but it took 10 days for it to get here. And I was like, this is absolutely crazy. Like, I don't know how this huge brand has not figured out their logistics of their company. So I think it's about not getting complacent as well. So like, not just thinking that your customers are going to come back time and time again. And also as well, we are constantly striving to improve our logistics. So like, even though it's 8 p.m. cutoff, I'm like, how can we get it to 10 p.m.? And how can we reduce our shipping costs? And all those tiny little small wins that you can get logistically will definitely pay off, because the customer will notice that, and then they will then use you as their go-to brand for gifts, or if they want something last minute, because they feel like safe and secure when they're coming to your brand.
And I think that's such a refreshing approach, especially in the e-com industry, because I think, I know we talked a little bit about, you see all of these Instagram campaigns, all of the big influencers, often it's very commercially focused, like, let's just focus on the almost the exciting brand piece, sales and marketing, and actually where it's great to get all those customers in, but then if you don't have your ducks in a row in terms of how you look after them and how you deliver to the expectations that you've set, it almost becomes that it's a wash. You get the people in, but then they don't stay, and you get the churn, and you get... So I think it's really nice to hear that that piece has been such a focus for you. That sort of leads us into, I think, really nicely, because the way you were talking then really lends itself to some of your behaviours, where you've got more of that detail piece in you, you're more procedural, you're more of that integrator mindset of how do we cross the T's, dot the I's, make sure that we've got everything in place, where Jack is a little bit more of those visionary behaviours. Talk us through a little bit, because I think people are always interested in the dynamic between people who are partners, but also how that dynamic works for you guys from a behavioral standpoint and how you play to each other's strengths.
Yeah, no, definitely. So Jack is very commercially minded. So he is all about the facts and figures, and he is definitely the visionary for the brand, like you said. And I am definitely more in the detail. So I prefer the... I'm awful at numbers, so don't ever ask me to do the numbers. But I definitely prefer like the brand side of things. So I love interacting with the customers. I love giving them the best product they can ever get their hands on. I love making sure that if we've got a new clasp going out in a new collection, that it's been tested over 1,000 times, so that when it gets there, they're not going to wear it 5 times and the clasp breaks. So like, I think our two skill sets lend each other really, really well, because I think if you just had me, you'd probably have a great product and a great brand, but you probably wouldn't make any money. And if you just had Jack, you probably would have loads of money, but not a good customer base or any good product. So we very much complement each other in that sense. And I think it's really important to recognize those skill sets in yourself. Like, I have always said from the very beginning, I'm not very good at numbers. I'm trying to be better, of course. But I think it's good to acknowledge your strengths and weaknesses and then to either hire into that or try and find someone who is better at that. And I think it's about having that like almost like a humble approach to work. I would never be like, oh, I want to be the visionary or I want to do this, because I just know that my skill set isn't there. So I think that, yeah, we work really well together, because if he starts telling me about product, I'll be like, shut up, that's not your remit. And if I and if I started telling him about the cash flow forecast, he'd be like, are you joking? Like, you have no idea. So I think it's about having like the respect for each other's skill set that works really well. And I think that is probably what has led to the TDE's success.
I think that's so interesting, because that's like us, isn't it? And we've worked really hard on split accountabilities, because initially you think when you're building a business you want to do everything, you kind of want to have your finger in everything, and we had to have some brutal conversations about where our separate strengths lie, and then we kind of do that with each other where we're like, okay, that's not your bit, let me take that, or I've got it, I'll run with it. And I think that word humble is really interesting from a leadership perspective, because we've definitely seen situations where that's gone wrong and people's egos get in the way and they're like, well, I want to do that bit. And it's actually, but who's best placed to do it? Where are they playing in line with their strengths versus what you want to do or what you perceive to be a strength, but there's actually somebody else that could be stronger.
It was interesting to listen to Olivia talk about where that's not where my skills lie.
Yeah.
But actually, it's not just about where your skills lie, it's also where your passion lies. Because if you're playing to your passion and the area that you're most interested in, you're also then going to be, it's, we describe it as swimming with the current instead of swimming against the current. It's going to take less energy from you. One of the things I just wanted to highlight on your behavioral profile is that you are quite unusual in the sense that you've got that detail and you've got the procedural bit in you, but you're also 90% initiation. So, and that is a little bit, that combination's unusual. So you've got this, you're obviously, the pace is important for you. You want to get things done, you dive in, you want to get things started, but you also want to have an eye on the detail. And that is, I'm highlighting it because it's quite an unusual mix. How does that lend itself to you? How do you balance the urge and the need to have the detail, but you also want the pace? How do you manage that?
Yeah, so I think what you mean is I'm actually quite impatient.
Listen, it takes one to know one. We're both 100% initiation, so.
Yeah, so I would say that I am super impatient. So I do have to like really almost like take a step back, because I want everything done yesterday. But I also want it done really, really well. So I think I've been quite lucky so far, because jewelry is you have quite fast turnaround times, that there's, you don't have to plan a year ahead, because oh my god, if I had to plan a year ahead I would be going crazy. Like, we're entering a new category for next summer and the lead time is like 90 days, and I'm like, 90 days, what, how am I gonna wait that long? I'm like, I want to put it on my story now. So I do struggle with that a lot. But I think it's about taking high levels of action where you can, but also being conscious that not everything is going to happen overnight, and that you do, I think you just get better at it. You just learn how to be patient. And I try and do things in the meantime. So say, for example, this new launch is next summer. Instead of trying to think about the new launch, I'll just try and keep myself busy in the meantime, so that I'm not thinking about that launch. So it's about keeping myself busy, but also maintaining that high standard, because that high standard is the reason why we're here today.
If you are enjoying today's episode and you want to figure out if you are more of a visionary leader and manager or more of an integrator, click the link in our show notes to access our free trial today. Talk us through a little bit of some of that profile of taking a product to market and consideration of the customer in that process. Because we've done quite a lot of work with some brands recently about, they've got that ICP really front and center. Talk to us a little bit about what that process looks like for you.
Yeah, so my customer is me. So I basically design or buy or lean into anything that I want, which I guess is probably very biased, but it's worked so far. And what I find really interesting about customers, often when you do customer focus groups, I obviously listen to everything that they say and take that on board. But a lot of the time, customers don't actually know what they want. They want you to tell them what they want. And we find it even like on our website, like our bestsellers are obviously our bestsellers. But say, for example, we put a new product on the top of the bestseller list, it would then become a bestseller. So it's just showing that we know our customers so well, because I wouldn't put a product in a bestseller without knowing how much that they would love it. So it's about knowing what they want, but then also listening to their feedback on what they want, and then also telling them what they want. So you have to basically think ahead of what they want versus like listen to what they say. So you have to have a bit of a blend of the both. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but yeah, a blend of the what they listen to what they want and also predict what they want. Yeah. Works really well for us.
I think what you're describing, it's slightly, dare I say, easier when you are your own buyer persona. Yeah. When you're not, it is more difficult to connect with that buyer persona. You know, there'll be listeners on here where they'll be thinking, well, yeah, that would be convenient if I was my buyer persona. But if you're not, you then have to get into the heads of someone that's not you. And that's when I think that market research and the focus groups is even more critical, because you can't possibly think like them. It's, you know, we've been doing some work around our own buyer persona recently.
And we're typically not our persona. But it's interesting what you say about they sometimes don't know what they want. Because we definitely find that even though we're not the persona necessarily for us, often what they're saying they want, you need to take that. But also they've not often got a pain or a problem that they know, but they don't know how to solve it. So they almost like haven't got the want at the other end of it yet, because they've just got the pain and they haven't almost evolved that thinking. So then we need to come in and fill in the dots. So I think that is interesting around that gap sometimes where in your customer journey.
Yeah, and I mean, you're also predicting trends and giving people new things that they didn't even know existed. So it's slightly different with a product-based business, but really interesting. I want to know a little bit about, and you are humble and, you know, a pretty modest woman, but you've won and been shortlisted for some amazing awards. What do those awards mean for you?
Yeah, so I think the awards, I get a bit funny about awards, because I actually think, like, if you move yourself out of the situation, they probably don't actually mean anything. But it's great. Well, everything I do is for the brand, and it is great awareness for the brand. And if that awareness is also directed at me, it makes me feel a bit funny, because I'm like, it's not about me, it's about the brand. But I know that it comes hand in hand. So yeah, so in the beginning I was a bit shy about them, because I think it is, as women, we don't really like having recognition. I feel like we always think it should be for someone else. So I definitely am trying to improve on that. But yeah, the awards are just an incredible byproduct of the hard work that we have put in over the last 3.5 years. And I always want my team to also win my award. So I'm like, guys, this isn't just my award, this is our award, because it literally takes a village. So yeah, I think the awards they're nice to have, and it's great to have that recognition. But yeah, I don't think, they just kind of make me a bit nervous.
Yeah, I mean, you've got achievement in you as one of your motivators. Your top motivator is achievement. So you're obviously driven by the achievement element. It sounds to me like sometimes, and this is typical, sometimes people don't want that achievement just to be about them. It's also linked to the collective and the team.
Yeah. I'm interested to touch on, given what you do, how are you balancing the sustainability element? Because obviously the whole point of the jewellery that you create, in addition to being beautiful, is that functionality of you can wear it anywhere, it won't tarnish. How do you balance that with, obviously that then means that people don't repurchase the same products often because it's lasting. How are you balancing that? Because I think that's a challenge for a lot of businesses that are navigating that more sustainable way of producing products now.
Yeah, I think as well, like, sustainability, again, is probably just such a buzzword. And look, we're not perfect. And the most sustainable approach is to not buy anything. So it's a bit tricky to actually say that you're a sustainable company if you are encouraging people to buy. So I think for us, it's about constantly having that fresh new product, but also not having to replace product that you already have. It's about almost like adding to your collection to wear at different times. And we recently have just moved all of our production. So now all of our stainless steel is 90% recycled, which is a huge step for us. And that costs an absolute fortune. But I know that it will be a worthwhile investment for our customers because they will be just as conscious as sustainability as I am. Like, I am so conscious. Like, I'm always like those eco warriors, getting my recycling done, like making sure that my cans are washed out. So it wouldn't feel authentic to me if then my brand was going against everything that I believe in. So I think it's about progressing in the correct way rather than trying to be perfect in sustainability.
Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk a lot in our business about driving high performance in the team and looking at your management structure and how do you encourage sort of that ongoing CPD for your team. How have you managed to encourage that lifelong learning element within your business? Tell us a little bit about the team.
Yeah, so I think it's about culture is so important in any business, and especially in a startup. There's not a huge amount of us. So when one energy is down, you can definitely feel it throughout the whole team. So that is super important for us to constantly having that growth mindset. And I think it's about getting used to having feedback from colleagues and people that you work with and not seeing that feedback as someone attacking you, which I always used to think, like Jack would give me feedback and I'd be like, I can't believe you just said that. And then it's about like, so I've actually done a lot of work on it myself about having get given feedback and having it as actually this is an opportunity to grow from it rather than be offended by it, because I think it can be quite tricky to receive feedback. But once you have that narrative that, oh no, this is an opportunity to grow and I can develop, I think then that just makes the feedback so much more easy to take. So I think we've instilled that in our team from the very beginning, and it's all about mindset and it's all about your company values. Like, our values are be brave, live happy and choose simplicity. So like that live happy one is definitely, I would say, instilled in the team, because we know that we need to show up every day and become the best version of ourselves, but also not get complacent and constantly evolve as individuals and also as a company.
Interesting. What's been, I think, as a nice little wrap-up question for you, what's been your most impactful lesson, do you think?
I would say my most impactful lesson would probably be stack the small wins. I know we spoke about it earlier. But like when you're in that day to day, it can feel so relentless that you're literally, I always say it's like we're walking up Mount Everest with like without an oxygen mask. Like, it's so difficult, and it's about learning to be comfortable in that in like those hard situations. And it's about not being perfect. It's just about progress and making sure that every day you're showing up as like the best version of yourself. Which I try to do every single day, but don't get me wrong, like I have bad days. Like, I sometimes find that it is really tricky to live by that mantra. But yeah, I think it's about having the small wins, constantly progressing, and eventually you'll get to that big win. And it might take you a few years to get there, but if you're growing and succeeding every single day, then you don't care how long it takes you to get there because you're constantly evolving.
I think that's a really lovely lesson, especially for people who are in that scale journey, which, like you say, it can just sometimes feel like you are just wading through treacle every day, and you get these high highs, but then they drop, and almost that ability to just look at the day and say, okay, what is it about today that was a win? Even if it's not the huge win, but where are some of the small wins? But thank you so much for joining us. We have loved talking to you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I've loved it too.
So let's wrap up with some key takeaways from Olivia's episode. The first has to be stuck in the small wins and that thought process that not just to focus on all of the big stuff, but that actually if you do things consistently every day and celebrate the small things, that they then positively compound. Olivia talked about when she first spoke to her fiancé, Jack, about starting the business, that he said, the only difference between you and I is that I've done it before. And that's such a lovely lesson for leaders and managers, whether you run a business or whether you have been promoted into a new role, to really understand that the only difference between you and the people above you or who have more experience than you is the fact that they've done it before. Finally, I think a really lovely message from this episode was that thought process of pressure is a privilege. And during those times where you